Session number 12241, Mr. Laverick, Reel 2.
Mr. Laverick, Reel 2. You were telling me about the part-time jobs you used to do to try and make
ends meet. Yes, well, Cadian was the chief part. The Cadian was, brother and I. And these tents, if we nibbed in the summer, we could nib down from school and get around on the golf course and get tents. We should nip home with them. And that was cash in the kitty from my mother. And then when we got home, if we didn't have a caddy, she had been doing washings. She used to do washings for the people in Jesmond, the big houses in Jesmond. She used to do washings for them. And after she was finishing the iron and such like, we used to take the washings out and get the money for the washing and take it home. And that was how you lived in those days, because your father was out of work, blacklisted from the colliery, looking for the job. This was after the blacklisting became all right throughout all the colleries. If you blacklisted from one, you blacklisted them from the wall after that. But
that was after the 21 strike.
After the 21 strike.
I'll come back to that in a minute. Were there any other part-time jobs you did?
Well,
or was it just caddying?
Just the caddying, but you see, the caddying wasn't all, because actually, along the golf course, you had rough grass, you had burns, and a ditch. You had what they called the ooze burn down the centre of the course, and the ditch that ran across. So after we were finished at nights, we used to nip down, we always had our bare feet straight in the burn, plodge, and get the balls. And we used to make money selling balls back to the golfers that had been lost in the burns and in the rough grass. We used to get pennies and tuppences for the balls. So we made money out of that as well. But there were jobs, but we were never allowed to do a paper job. They never wanted the pitties on a paper job. I don't know why. Don't know why. But if we went for a job and you told them where you lived, were you father a miner? Yes. I'm sorry, I don't want you here. We never got a decent job, evening job. We never got a paper job, paper round, anything like that. It was either the Sandys or the Pitties or the Sandys or the Ordinies and these that got them jobs. There was the class in those times. The miner was the bottom. He was the lowest of the law, the miner was.
And you were aware of that, were you?
Oh, yes. Very well.
When did you get your first political feelings? And was it before the 1921 strike? Or
It was during the 1921 strike.
Because you were only a kid.
I was 11 years old. And we got... A chap came up from London, from the Daily Herald, and the collieries were on strike. There'd been the lockouts before that, and the collieries in those days didn't work full-time, you know. They never worked full-time. We used to get up in the morning, and at a certain time, we used to listen for the buzzer. If the buzzer went, you'd find your mother in tears, because the pit wasn't working that day. They used to blow the buzzer to let them know they weren't going to start the collieries that day. They had a system, the owners had a system, where they would close certain collieries for so many days and certain other collieries for so many days. So the miner never made a reasonable wage, never got a decent weekly wage, you see. You always had these days off. And I can always remember those times. But this chap came up and he was flogging the Daily Herald, actually. He was up to promote the sale of the Daily Herald in the area at the miners' meetings, because in those days, the miners, when they held a meeting, was just word of mouth. And was in the colliery yards and whatnot that the meetings were held, you see. Anyways, ground. We used to have a top burn field and a bottom burn field. We used to use the bottom burn field for the meetings. And what we used to do was to just make a pair of step ladders with a platform on, put the stuff on there, and that was your platform straight away for the meeting. And he used to get onto the little bit staging that you made and whatnot for him. And we used to go around and advertise that we're having this speaker for the Daily Herald, and used to go down and hear him. And he came to lodge at our house, which was a very, very nice thing, because it brought money into the house for the time he was here.
He paid?
He paid. He definitely paid. And it was a great relief, because we were well fed and whatnot the time he was at the house. And I believe he was up for about 6 weeks promoting that, and then he stopped on the time the strike lasted, the 21 strike, the time it lasted, going around the various mining areas, bringing forward the Daily, advertising the Daily Herald and whatnot, and speaking on behalf of the Daily Herald.
Now, the Daily Herald was the paper of which organisation?
It was the Labour. It forwarded the Labour movement. The Daily Herald.
Was it connected with any particular? Was it connected with the Labour Party then, or? It or was just the Labour movement generally?
It was just the Labour movement generally, wasn't it? It was termed the Labour paper. The Daily Herald was termed the Labour paper. And naturally, it was pushed wherever they went. It was the Daily Herald that was pushed. And that was the real benefit that we got from that, though. But always remember this chap used to start and tell me about... how he used to ask questions, and how we survived, how did you manage to survive, and this sort of thing. He just couldn't believe that people could live on the amounts of money and such like that they had in those days. He said it wasn't even in existence. He says, you don't even exist. He says, I'm surprised, he says, that there hasn't been rioting and all this. So he used to bring it to you, and he used to tell you that there was going to... there's going to be a good time coming. The workers are going to rise. And this is when I start to turn political. I used to always tell myself, oh, I'm a worker. There'll be a time when I'll be wanted. And he used to take me round with him when he was speaking at various places.
Is this in 21, during the strike?
During the strike. And he used to put me on the little platforms. I remember one time they had a cart, one of these flat carts. And he was speaking from then. He put me up on the platform and just asked me to tell them about the times that I had to go and pay a penny to get bread, butter at the shop before that was my breakfast before I went to school, before they got the breakfast organised at the hall. And how I used to come down to the soup kitchens from school, and I used to tell them this sort of thing, how I was fed. I wasn't fed by the state. Charity. We lived on charity.
Were you nervous because you're only 11?
No, I don't think I was nervous. I was used to the youngsters and whatnot. We, in those days, you were always playing together and whatnot. And you always saw... Actually, I wasn't nervous because the miners lived on a system of their own. A mining colony. The village life was wonderful. After the pubs closed at nights... on a Saturday, they used to go and have the drink, what they called the one drinking night, the Saturday. And after the pubs closed, I always remember, they used to come up, and this is when we really enjoyed ourselves. We're only kids, but we used to sit and watch them dancing. We used to have a chap used to play the concertina, and they used to come up to the end, the road ends, and there were no streets in those days. It was just Colliery Waste. It was the streets around the collieries where we lived. There wasn't any concrete or anything, just the colliery waste. But they used to come up and they used to get the concertina going at the end of the rows, and the people used to be dancing and such like. And this was the entertainment in those days. And I always remember, because in the allotments at the bottom of the street, old colliers that were finished their lifetime, old age pensioners, were living in huts on the allotments. And people used to send their dinner over, send a meal over for them. That's how they finished up after a lifetime of work in those days. Lived on the allotments. Old Wallace, Ellis, all lived on the allotments. People used to send meals across for them. But of course, you had miners in those days that used to keep chickens, used to keep a pig. And it used to be the great occasion when they killed the pig. Because everyone got a cheap cut of pork, and you had a meal, you had a real good meal. We only had dinner once a week, Sundays, your Sunday dinner. We used to always be home for the Sunday dinner.
So you went, during the 21 strike, you were going round.
That's right, he was taking me around, put me on the platform to tell the people how I lived, how I was fed.
Were you at school as well? I mean, was
I was at school, yes.
That was after school?
It was after school when the meetings were held. It was in the evening meetings. It was after school when the evening meetings were held.
What else do you remember about the strike?
Well, I remember very well the miners. You see, the 1921 was actually like the 1926 also. As well as a strike, it was also a lockout. Because when the strike, they were defeated in those days. The 21 strike was different to the 26 strike. The 26 strike, all the miners came out. The 21 strike, there were certain mines came out in certain areas. Men in Durham were going to work when men in Northumberland were working. They were, the owners were cutting the wages down in certain areas only. So they were coming out on strike where the wages and hours were being, where the hours were being increased and the wages cut down. You see, it was a system in the 21, as I say, where they used to recruit the miners. The manager used to, on their own terms, they used to put in a price for the area they were working in. It was subcontracting, that's all it was. It was subcontracting. There was only the stone men that were employed by the colliery. Everybody else was subcontracted.
Were most of the miners in Northumberland out?
Northumberland were all out.
And Durham were working?
Durham were working.
Did that cause friction?
Caused a tremendous amount of friction. Because I always remember when Northumberland were working and Durham were out, this was the system in those days, and the Durham miners coming across for work in the Northumberland mines, and they were called scabs and told to...
That was after the 21?
After the 21 strike.
Was there any actual scabbing during the 21
strike? There was scabbing, but at the finish, at the start, there was scabbing. But they were very soon stopping going to work.
How?
They were scared. They were frightened of going to work. A scab, once a scab, always a scab. And it's the same today.
How did they put the scabs out?
The scabs were put out because they were threatened. They were actually threatened. They were told what was going to happen to them if they didn't stop.
Were the scabs people from within the villages or were they people from outside?
They were from inside the villages, but they were usually the people that... were friends of the manager and were getting the good seams, getting the good cables, what they called cables in those days. The ones that got the good cables and whatnot, and always kept in with the manager and such like, his friends. But they used to get them out.
How serious a threat would be made to them? I mean, what sort of threat?
Well, they used to tell them that they could have an accident. There were a lot of accidents in collieries those days. It was nothing to say the colliery ambulance bringing back the wounded or bringing back the dead. We very often saw them, a dead one, brought out the mines.
Were the threats real?
Yes, they were real. Oh, yes, threats were real. I've seen many a fight at the colliery head, at the head of the colliery, people that were going into work and someone stopping them and getting into, coming to blows. Oh, yes, they were. They meant it. It was real. The threat was real.
But it was seen as a matter of... The men that were out, it was seen as a matter of life and death, and the scabs were undermining their whole thing.
It was actually a matter of life and death, because, you see, after a certain time, you lost your house. You were just on the streets. And very often, people were put on the streets and nowhere to go. I had to go in with friends and such like, because they were put on the street by the colliery owners.
So scabs were undermining the whole of the union effort?
The whole system was undermined by scabbing. And it was the same in the 26th strike. And you see, the peculiar thing was, it was the same people in the 26th strike, in the 84th strike, the same people in the 84th strike scabbed that scabbed in the 26th strike. And that was the Nottingham miners. They were the same people.
I'll come back to that, because I'm going to come on. So, the 21 strike, how did it end for you and in your area? I mean...
Well, I always remember the men going up to Seaton Burn Colliery, and all carried pick shafts and going and demanding work. And they went with pick shafts because the police at the colliery had been put there in force to stop them from getting in.
It was a lockout was it?
It was a lockout by now to stop them getting in. And I always remember the men marching down with their pick shafts, and the police couldn't take the pick shafts away from them because it was part of their working. They were going back to work. In their way, they were going back to work. They were stopped. The manager stopped them, had a word with them, but arranged with them for to go back. And they went back, not like an ordinary strike, in different mines. It broke down at different mines. Certain mines went back, and then other mines had to follow. They didn't all go back together, the 21.
And did Seaton Burn go back early or late?
It went back late. Seaton Burn was always a tough colliery.
It was a militant?
Militant colliery. Always a militant colliery.
How long had the strike lasted, about? Or at Seaton Burn, anyway?
I reckon the 21 would last somewhere around about... Now, we went to the soup kitchens all summer. It must have lasted somewhere around about the 7 or 8 months, the 21.
Were there many disillusioned ex-servicemen about amongst the miners? Because a lot of miners have been...
Well, the miners, you see, were usually a reserved occupation, but actually what happened was, in the First World War, according to what my uncle told me and my father told me, you see, my father was a small chap. My uncles were all very small. A lot of miners were small then. Now, what had happened was, during the First World War, when they were getting short of men for the Hague and campaign, when they were running short of recruits and whatnot, couldn't no longer get them in, they formed a new unit. And this was called, what was it for the small ones?
Bantams.
The Bantams. Now, my father was in the Bantams, my Uncle Joe was in the Bantams. Now, the Bantams were utilised for the... get the Germans away from Hill 60, undermined Hill 60. And then they were taken from there, and my Uncle Joe was taken to Salonika and these places. He went through Salonika and these other places. So we got plenty of war history at that age from them that had been to the, recruited in the Bantams.
How did people like your father and your Uncle Joe, who'd been in the war, feel about being locked out of work 2 years after they were back?
This was it, you see, the point was this, that they were promised all sorts when they went into the services, promised a land of honey when we came back. But it was the same after the Second World War as after what actually happened after the First World War. First of all, there was no remuneration for the people coming out in the Second World War, the same as there wasn't in the First World War. There was no remuneration.
So what happened when your colour at Seaton Burn went back to your father? I mean...
My father was blacklisted from Seaton Burn.
Straight away?
Straight away.
So he never got back to work?
He didn't get back. Union men didn't get back to work. The strong union men didn't get back to work after a strike.
Didn't the rest of the workforce do anything to try and protect them? Or was
You see, although miners were very, very... strict and very militant. They weren't all union men. The system didn't allow for them all to be union men.
So what proportion of Seaton Burn would be union, roughly?
Well, the people that were on the low pay would be the union men, and the ones that would be doing well out the collieries. You see,
about how many would that be, you know, on low, union?
I would say there would be about half and half. There must have been about 50%.
So they weren't strong enough to sort of strike to demand that your father got his job back and the rest of the union?
Never strong enough to make certain of that.
So he was blacklisted in 21, and that's where he went to?
He went... in 21, he went from colliery to colliery. It was blacklisting in collieries then, you see, just in the collieries then. It wasn't until after 26 that they got the whole...
So that's when he went to the next one?
He went to the next colliery. He went to Dinton, and he worked at Dinton for quite a while.
Now, you'd had a strange time now. I mean, your father was moving colliers. You were still at school, you were 11.
Yes.
Between 1921 and 1926, you'd be finishing school, you know. You'd been politicised at 11. How did that affect you during the rest of your school time?
It affected me very, very much, because we had... As I got older, and I was still at school, I started to go down to the adult school. Now, during the strikes, the adult schools were used by the miners on strike for further education. Games. I learned to play chess there. I learned to play bridge there. And a lot of the miners on the Northumberland Bridge team at that time had learned to play bridge during the strikes. The adult school, you see, was the nucleus for the workers to meet. And then, of course, they got the workers' educational, the WEA, and it went on from there. You see, the trade unions brought these speakers in, and you used to go to Lytton Phil in these places and listen to the political speakers that were.
So when did you start doing that? Did you start at 11 doing that then?
Not at 11, no. At 11, I think I must have thought a lot about what was happening. And I used to listen to a lot of things that were happening. And I used to see the various fights and whatnot that were taking place with miners and whatnot. Scabs and all this, that and that. I knew what scabs were. I knew what scabbing was. I saw what happened to them. And I must have been politically inclined along then. You see, when I was going down Canyon and such like, I must have been wondering then, what am I having to do this for so that we can live? People had been wanting to work all their lives.
Did you have any tendency before you left school to any political party?
Not before I left school. I don't think there was any political party at that time that made... that had any young people around.
So what age were you when you left school?
I was almost 14. I got a job and I was allowed to leave because I'd got a job.
So that'd be 1924-ish?
That was 1924-ish, yes.
And how had you got a job? And what your father had taken you down Seaton Burn just
before
he left, you know.
Yes, and I told him that I wasn't going down there. And I was going from school one day along, and I was having a look at the shops. And I saw it on the board in front of the fish shop, Erin Boy wanted. So I nipped in and asked for the job and got it. And I started life as an Erin Boy at a fish, game and poultry dealers.
What did that involve then?
It just involved taking out orders. I had a carrier bike and it just involved taking out orders. And it's a peculiar thing, but we used to start early morning. We never finished till during the week, about half past six, but on a Friday, 9 o'clock. Friday was the fish day. It was 9 o'clock on a Friday. And I always remember the Friday, because I always remember Fridays and Saturdays. On the Saturday was the game day. That's when the people with the cash used to buy the game and have it sent out with the order boy. And I was always very busy on a Friday and Saturday. The Saturday used to annoy me because the boss I worked for, very good, I used to get on great with him, but he used to say to me every Saturday about 6 o'clock, here you are, Bill, come and get these two orders and you can take them, you can go straight home. And I used to go on a carrier bike and get the two orders, put them in the basket and go off to deliver. One was Arcot Hall, the other side of Seaton Burn, and the other one was at Dudley. The vicarage at Dudley. So I had to go around a journey of about 10 miles at 6 o'clock at night. And then he told me I could finish. I needn't go back. So I used to be away around as hard as I could to try and get an early night. And I enjoyed life. I enjoyed my working time, the time I was there.
How long were you there for?
I was there till I was reached the age for full pay, and the system in those days in the shops was when you reached the age for full pay, 18-year-old.
18?
Yes. You used to dispose of you and get someone else young to train in again.
So and you were there from 24 to 28?
28.
So
and
you were,
I wasn't order boy all the time. I moved up onto the poultry benches.
What did that mean?
That meant... dressing poultry and plucking game and skinning rabbits and this sort of thing. I was in charge of that. I was up doing that sort of work. That used to be upstairs and they used to have a lift and when anybody came in, bought a couple of rabbits and wanted them skinned and chopping up and such like, they just put them on the lift, send them up and you were there to do them. If they wanted pigeons or pheasants or anything, you had to plot them and dress them.
And that was better paid?
Better paid.
And easier, I suppose.
It was a job where you could get a sedan.
And what was the name? Do you remember the name of the place? It was on Gosforth High Street.
Gosforth High Street, Little Burns.
Lilburn's?
Yes, Lilburn's. And they were quite good bosses, but like all other businesses, you see, as the business started to go down, they brought the family in. Daughter, one of the daughters got married, and a husband was brought into business. So somebody else had to go out, you see. And my friend that lives down in London, where you are now, my friend that lives down in London, he was actually paid off because of his militancy. He went and asked for a rise. He went and asked for a rise. And he said to him, what do you want? He said, I want a rise. He said, I've been working here 2 years now and I've not had a rise. Well, he says, call the Saturday, he says, and get your cards. He says, we can do it without you. And he was paid off. And he never forgot it. Jimmy never forgot it, Hemsley. He would never forgot it. But actually, the communist, Jimmy was.
Did you ever think of asking for a rise, or did you have more sense?
I never went and asked for a rise.
There was no union for shop workers
then?
There
was no union for shop workers then. And there was no need for me to go for a rise, because actually, as I said, he wasn't a bad employer. And he knew with the poverty that we had suffered. And I could depend upon it. Every night when I went home, I had a bit of fish, I had a bit of rabbit, something to take home. So there was always something the time I was working at the shops. And then...
Hang on a minute. Now, while you were at that shop, the 26th strike came along, though.
That's right.
Now, how did that affect you and your family?
Well, it affected the family were affected very, very much.
Had your father been working? Which colliery was he on when the strike started?
My father was back at Seaton Burn. He'd got down to another manager, a new manager, and he'd got a job at Seaton Burn. He got back to the colliery where he'd actually
so the blacklisting had faded. But it had been dropped.
Well, it had been dropped.
Had your father changed? Was he as militant as ever?
Oh, yes. He was always a militant. He never changed throughout his life.
So take me through the strike then. What happened with the strike?
Well, the 26th strike, it was organised, was better organised. But of course, you see, the reason it was organised was it started through a general strike. The miners didn't only come out on their own and start with a general strike, the 26th strike. And because it started with a general strike, the militants right throughout the country came out. It wasn't only the miners. And the miners, it was started through the miners because the miners had been asked to take longer hours, an hour longer working time, and a reduction in pay, a bob a day off their pay, they'd been asked to take, and they'd refused to do it. They were already in poverty and they were asking them to take less. And the peculiar thing was that when they were asking them to take less, you know, these collieries, the Seaton Burn Coal Company, they had made a profit each year for the previous 3 years. A profit of £13 or £15 million a year they made a profit of.
When the strike was bubbling, before it started, were you following the thing? Were you political enough to follow what your father was doing?
Well, what we used to do then, organisation really started to take part, and there was collections starting to take part. And I always remember we used to have parades and such like, the youngsters.
This is before the strike?
This was during the strike.
At the start?
Raising the cash at the start to keep the strike going.